News, I'm Gene Randall. French police once again had to disperse yellow vest demonstrators who converged on central Paris Saturday for the fifth straight weekend. They're protesting the high cost of living and their belief that French President Emmanuel Macron is out of touch with working people. Though it was largely peaceful, scuffles erupted, and police fired tear gas at demonstrators who scurried down side streets of the famed Champs-Élysées. 60 had been arrested in the capital by late Saturday morning, compared with about 500 detained at the same time last weekend. 8,000 police and 14 armored vehicles had been deployed in advance of today's protests. Pakistan's Prime Minister Imran Khan says the United States is scheduled to meet soon with the Afghan Taliban, and that Pakistan is helping move the process along at Washington's request. The U.S. has been meeting with Qatar-based Taliban delegates since July, but so far, they've apparently been little more than talks for the sake of talks. In a recent letter to Khan, U.S. President Donald Trump asked for his help in reaching an Afghanistan settlement, which he called his top priority in the region. Australia says it will formally recognize West Jerusalem as Israel's capital, but will not move its embassy from Tel Aviv until there is a peace settlement between Israel and the Palestinians. Australian Prime Minister Scott Morrison spoke about the decision.
Recognizing our commitment to a two-state solution, the Australian government has also resolved to acknowledge the aspirations of the Palestinian people for a future state with its capital in East Jerusalem. Australia believes this position respects both our commitment to a two-state solution and long-standing respect for relevant Security Council resolutions.
The Israeli government applauded the Australian announcement, while Palestinian leaders said Australia risked becoming an international pariah. For news anytime, you can always log on to voanews.com. This is VOA News. Indian officials say 11 people are dead and scores remain hospitalized after meeting tomato rice that was apparently contaminated at a new temple in the southern Indian state of Karnataka. Early speculation is that the rice was turned deadly by pesticides. According to the Hindustan Times, three temple employees are under arrest in the case. The gathering at the temple was a celebration of its construction. The U.S. State Department says it's ordered non-emergency government staff and family members of American government employees to leave Democratic Republic of Congo, this a week before a presidential election it fears could turn violent. Campaigning for the long-delayed December 23rd poll to choose President Joseph Kabila's successor had been mostly calm until this week, when security forces opened fire to disperse opposition gatherings, killing at least four people. A fire in the capital, Kinshasa, also destroyed thousands of voting machines and ballot boxes Thursday morning. And Kabila's ruling coalition and opposition candidates traded blame for the incident. French officials say a fourth victim of the Christmas market shooting in Strasbourg, an Italian journalist, has died. Police killed the alleged assailant in the market attack, Sharif Shakat, Thursday, and are searching for other potential suspects. The Islamic State terror group, without providing evidence, claimed responsibility for Tuesday's attack that wounded more than a dozen people. It called Shakat one of its soldiers. A Strasbourg native with Moroccan roots, Shakat had an extensive criminal record, and his name was on a French terror watch list. An investigation is underway, but U.S. Homeland Security is firmly defending its Border Patrol agents after a 7-year-old Guatemalan girl died in their custody. Jacqueline Calmachin and her father had traveled 2,000 miles to a remote U.S. border crossing in New Mexico, where they were detained. The girl became sick aboard a Border Patrol bus. She was taken to a hospital in El Paso, Texas, where she died hours later. A CAT scan showed she was suffering from a brain swelling. The incident has sharpened criticism of U.S. policy on southern border refugees. The United States and Canada have promised a fair judicial process for Huawei chief financial officer Meng Wanzhou, who was arrested in Canada, then released on bail. Canada arrested the executive at the request of the United States, which says Huawei violated U.S. sanctions on Iran. European leaders insist the separation agreement with Britain is not open for renegotiation. That is bad news for British Prime Minister Theresa May, who faces parliamentary demands for changes needed for necessary votes to approve the deal. All of this after an EU summit in Brussels, where Mrs. May had gone to plead her case. And after 2 months on a hunger strike, a little-known Iranian dissident has died, and that sparked outcry from the United States and human rights activists inside and outside Iran. Gene Randall, VOA News.
Good evening and welcome to Nightline Africa. We are coming to you live from the English service of the Voice of America. Thanks for joining us. I'm Peter Clotte in Washington.
He likes to whip and nail the political sympathy. He wants to be seen that he's been victimized, but it's quite unfair and unusual utterances that are extremely, extremely unfortunate.
Malawian government rejects alleged plot to assassinate Vice President Saulos Chilima.
You can expect Masisi to get a little bit harder and harsher on Khama going forward. We hope it doesn't come to that because you don't really know the true strength of Ian Khama, but I doubt that he's got enough influence anywhere else other than in the central part of the country.
Elders in Botswana struggle to resolve tension between President Mokgweetsi Masisi and his predecessor, former President Ian Khama.
Next week, that is on the 17th of December, seven ministers will be sworn in. And the majority of those seven come from those people, from the region of those people who are complaining.
And Lesotho Prime Minister Tom Tabani threatens to expel ruling party members who engage in public media mudslinging. Those stories and more coming up on Nightline Africa. The Malawian Minister for Homeland Security, Nicholas Dawusi, has sharply rejected accusations that the administration plans to assassinate Vice President Saulos Chilima. The minister says the accusation is a mere publicity stunt by the vice president ahead of next year's general election. His remarks came after the vice president said he has names of the people plotting to kill him. Chilima adds that some of the alleged assassins are from Malawi and South Africa. So far, the vice president has yet to disclose their names. For reaction to the vice president's statement, I reached Malawian Minister for Homeland Security, Nicholas Dawusi.
Well, the vice president is not being fair. I think he's creating unnecessary political aspersions aimed at winning political sympathy. There's nothing truth about it. The vice president has an elaborate security. 24 hours the whole week, he has almost an exaggerated security, almost 62 security officers that look after him. And if he is saying that there is a conspiracy to kill him, it means, first of all, does he mean that he doesn't trust the security operation? Secondly, why should we kill him? For what reason? What has he done? What is he? The problem of our vice president is that he overrides himself. He thinks that he's the most important person, most valuable politician. But there has been people in Malawi who have been in politics and have done very commendable job. So he is not being fair. It's not true. There is no way. In fact, what is going on, I think he's fearing the day, the 21 May 2019, the day of the vote, because the people of Malawi will definitely throw him away because they won't vote for him. Maybe he needs, what he wants to tell the world is that it's not going to be voted.
Well, Mr. Dawusi, this is what some people are suggesting, that at least why wouldn't the government investigate this alleged conspiracy to assassinate him to determine whether he is telling the truth or not?
In fact, that's a good question. He himself said, well, I'm not going to report to police. I'm not going to report to the security agent. Don't question me. Please don't. So it means it's purely conjecture. It's purely political innuendos. I think complete political tantrums that cannot help in any democratic dispensation.
Well, supporters of the UTM are of the view that he is going to defeat the DPP or help to defeat the DPP in the next election, and that is why the government is trying to use people to...
If all wishes were horses, beggars would ride.
Mr. Dawusi, you seem not to take him seriously, but he's of the view that first, the government tried to block his party from registration, and now your people are trying to use all kinds of means to silence him, even to an extent of assassinating him.
No, those are necessarily melodramatic politics. Well, the way he delivers the speech is more important than the speech itself. So I think he's a dramatist, and the people should not take these things seriously. It's unbelievable. It's bizarre, by the way.
So why wouldn't the government invite him? Because he said he knows some of the people, and that at one rally, he locked eyes with one of the would-be assassins, and the guy ran away.
Right. Well, yes, then an assassin locked the eye of the would-be the target, and then the man runs away. I mean, the story doesn't teach us, you can't stitch the story together, but he likes to whip a man on a political sympathy. He wants to be seen that he's been victimized, but it's quite unfair and unusual utterances that are extremely, extremely unfortunate.
He called on the police to investigate this. As the Minister of Homeland Security, are you going to take any action based on what he's saying?
He said the police should not investigate, and the police should not ask to help them get the leads. So if he blocked the police not to investigate, if he said he doesn't want anybody to question him, so why should I bother, saying where to go investigate? Because he says, well, the advantage is that he says he has all the names, he has everything. So he is himself a target of assassination, himself a police officer, himself a detective, himself a court of law, himself a prosecutor, and himself a judge. Can you believe that? It's unbelievable.
Nicholas Dawusi is the Malawian Minister for Homeland Security. He spoke with me from the capital, Blantyre. The feud between Botswana President Mokgweetsi Masisi and his predecessor, former President Serete Kama Ian Khama, shows no signs of abating. Local media reports say it escalated after President Masisi moved the former president's younger brother from the Tourism Ministry to the Ministry of Youth and Sports, a decision made in a cabinet reshuffle Friday, seen as a demotion. The reports add that the president has also been dismantling some of the former president's policies. To learn more, I read Kialebo Hadihitsu, a Botswana broadcast journalist in the capital, Habaroni.
I think to a very large extent, the former president, Serete Kama Ian Khama, resents the fact that Masisi has reversed some of his pet policies. He wishes Masisi had not been in a rush to change certain policies that he came up with, specifically the Liquor Act. I mean, as we speak now, today, they adjusted the liquor trading hours. And that is a small part of the problem. They've done it on a few other programs, even some of things that were not really policies, but they were accepted as part and parcel of the way the Khama administration was run. So, yes, Khama, I think, resents that Masisi is reversing quite a few of his policies.
I understand there was a cabinet reshuffle where Khama's brother in cabinet was moved from one portfolio to the other, and that has not pleased Ian Khama as well. What can you tell me about this?
The Khamas have vested interest in tourism. Khama's, the former president's younger brother, was heading the tourism ministry, which means their interests were generally taken care of. They knew they were safe. But Masisi has removed him from tourism. He has taken him to youth, sports and culture, which for all intents and purposes, we may not really use the word demotion, but to be realistic, it is a demotion because ministry has the lowest budget of all the ministries in the country, primarily because it's not really taken as serious as all the other ministries. Not because it's unimportant, but because it also feeds from all the other ministries. But in terms of influence, certainly, the Khamas have got far less influence than they did when they, well, at least the president's younger brother, Tekedi Khama, was still heading the Ministry of Wildlife and Tourism.
I understand elders from the ruling party attempted to try to reconcile the two gentlemen. Why haven't they been successful?
That's a confusing one because, you see, Ian Khama maintained that they were reconciled. Masisi, in a State of the Nation address, similar to your, you know, State of the Union address, he says the elders have failed. So I don't know whether Ian Khama is suggesting that a sitting president lied to the nation in a State of the Nation address, or Ian Khama himself is being dishonest about it, because he's saying they were actually, you know, reconciled. It's a bit of a confusing one right now. We're not really attending to it as a people because we don't really know what's going on. But we've accepted the president's word for it. We think that it has failed because they're still having a go at each other, and it's clear that Masisi is still hell-bent on reversing a lot of Hamas policies. So it's safe to say that Masisi is probably the one who's telling the truth and Kama isn't, but we could be wrong on that. But they haven't managed because I think primarily the two gentlemen have a different approach to how a country ought to be run. And some of the elders that we are talking about, one of them happens to be a former president, Rafesas Makhai, who was bluntly told by Kama and some of his associates when Kama was still president that he should not try to rule from the grave. It's going to be a bit difficult to expect Makhai to come out and sort of be on the side of Kama on anything, really. I think Makhai sort of agrees that Kama ought to take a step back. So probably the Council of Elders, as they call them, it's a bit of a compromised group itself. It's going to be very difficult for that group to actually bring peace between Masisi and Kama because it's compromised in so many ways. I don't see how it can function. I don't see how it can work. It was an ill-advised idea.
How are the people reacting to this, and where does this go from here?
I think at this point in time, Botswana are quite irritated. They thought this was going to last for about 30 days or so, and then eventually, these are two statesmen. They need to really shake it off and give priority to the running of the country. I think we're getting a little bit irritated as a nation, but we are not likely to do anything about it until the elections next year. It might affect the elections. Make no mistake about it. The central part of Botswana, Kama is fairly influential in that area, but you're still looking at, like I said, about 9 constituencies, so it won't really cause much damage to the ruling party even if they lost those constituencies. My view is, I think Masisi will ride it out, and at some point he will flex his muscle and show Kama that he's the one who's in control. I think he's beginning to do that right now. I think he's beginning to really go after Kama's fears of influence within government. So we can expect Masisi to get a little bit harder and harsher on Kama going forward. We hope it doesn't come to that because we don't really know the true strength of Ian Kama, but I doubt that he's got enough influence anywhere else other than in the central part of the country.
Kialebo Hadihito is a Botswana broadcast journalist. He spoke with me from Habaroni. The All Basotho Congress, or ABC, the ruling party in Lesotho, plans to hold its national congress in February. Members of the party will elect new executives to lead them, but the media reports disunity and tension within the party are seen in strong verbal exchanges on radio and in the press. The infighting reportedly forced Prime Minister Thomas Thabane to warn partisans that they will be expelled if they continue with verbal disputes in the media. For more about the upcoming Congress, I read Tabo Takwalekwala, spokesperson for the Lesotho Prime Minister in the capital, Maseru.
What is happening right now is the race for different positions within the executive of the ABC is hotting up. Different candidates are campaigning, mobilizing support so that they can be in the executive. And that has led to much clinging in the media, especially over the broadcast media. Some supporters of people who are vying for positions in the national executive are fighting each other using strong language on radios and in the print media. So the Prime Minister was saying, well, it is good that people should mobilize for their candidates, but it is not good when ABC members go to radio stations, fight publicly on air.
I understand where you're coming from. However, people are saying that the Prime Minister, Tom Thabane, is to blame for the apparent split and disunity within the ruling of Basotho Convention. What do you say to that?
I don't know the basis of that allegation. Because every time when the Prime Minister talks, he talks about unity within the party. He even told members of the party that it is high time they looked at people or a person who will succeed him after his term as the Prime Minister because he will not contest for the leadership of ABC. His constant message is that we must strive for unity within the party. More so because ABC is now the main partner in the ruling coalition. So those allegations that he has contributed to a split within the party, I think is baseless. Actually, I, for one, do not know of any split within the ADC. I do not know for one. Well, in a healthy democracy, there will be a difference of opinion. That is very healthy. That is very good.
Some people are saying the Prime Minister, when he was forming his cabinet, some areas did not get a fair representation in cabinet. Some of them said number 23 constituency was given only a single ministerial position from the Biria district. And they are not happy with that when they gave the All Basotho Congress the heaviest of 9 out of 11 contested seats.
There's no way in the constitution of the All Basotho Convention that says when the Prime Minister appoints ministers, he should look at all regions of the country. There's absolutely no provision like that. And it is the discretion, the sole discretion of the Prime Minister to choose whoever he thinks is capable of being in the cabinet. He doesn't need any advice from anybody. Secondly, the Constitution of the Kingdom of Lesotho does not instruct any prime minister to make sure that all regions of the country are represented in the cabinet. So I find that very, very baseless. I think if they want that, they should go to a special conference where they are going to amend the constitution of the ABC to provide for an appointment of cabinet ministers from all the 10 districts or from all the 80 constituencies of Lesotho.
Do you think that legislators from the Biria district who are unhappy that only one of their members were chosen as a cabinet minister, their concerns are not legitimate and that the prime minister should not even seek to address their concerns?
No, I'm not saying their concerns are not legitimate. I was only pointing out the point of law. And let me tell you, even though I'm not at liberty to do that, but I want to tell you that the prime minister is currently addressing that concern, because on Monday next week, that is on the 17th of December, new ministers, 7 ministers will be sworn in. And the majority of those 7 come from those people, from the region of those people who are complaining.
Thabo Takwalekwala is the spokesperson for the Lesotho Prime Minister. He spoke with me from Maseru. A Kenyan High Court has ordered 2 senior government officials to jointly pay lawyer Miguna Miguna $70,000. In granting the orders, Justice Chacha Mwita said taxpayers will not bear the burden for the pair's illegal actions earlier this year. The order follows a court ruling Friday that Miguna's birthright is not affected by him holding a Canadian passport, and said his rights were violated when the state deported him. To learn more, my colleague Douglas Impuga reached Fred Omulu, a Kenyan journalist in Kisumu.
There was a celebration, sort of. It was actually the top trending topic on Twitter in East Africa all of yesterday, and it beat the second trending topic more than twice, you know. So there was general celebration everywhere because everyone, both his critics and his admirers, felt that he had actually been treated very unfairly, and there was a general sense, both in high society and even amongst ordinary people, that if this could happen to someone as prominent as Miguna, then it can happen. What can happen to me, an ordinary person who doesn't have that similar kind of platform or voice?
And in the first, also the court ordered the Interior Cabinet Secretary and the Immigration Principal Secretary to jointly personally pay lawyer Miguna Miguna.
Yeah, this is a new benchmark, or should I say it's unprecedented before, mostly because the individuals who are told to pay that fine to Miguna Miguna actually disobeyed 2 previous court orders. One, calling for the return of his passport, which had been illegally confiscated by the government, by the immigration department. And another one, calling for them to allow him to come back once they deported him to Canada. Both of which were illegal actions, both of which were condemned by the courts when Miguna's lawyers went there over the past, I should say, about 10 months. It was just impunity among the individuals who were holding those offices. And the measures that the courts could have taken was probably to commit them to civil jail for contempt, but the arresting authorities, the police, fall directly under these guys. So they were really just disobeying the courts, and I think the courts said this is too much, so let me just target the individuals themselves.
Do you think the court's order will be implemented by these two senior government officials?
Yeah, they will have to implement it because these days the provisions of the Constitution are such that if you do not obey a court order in such instances, then you can be cited for contempt, you can be impeached. The Senate, the National Assembly are all empowered to be balanced and to have those checks and balances and ensure that office holders do their role. Previously, of course, probably they were not implementing those things because Parliament was still confused, but right now, going to be a different story altogether. It might cost these people their freedom if they disobey once again.
Miguna first got into trouble with government officials after swearing in then National Super Alliance presidential candidate Raila Odinga as the people's president. Mm-hmm. It appears they have eventually fallen out. Is that correct?
Yes, they did fall out because a month and a half after that incident, in which the swearing in as people president, Raila Odinga went behind the back of everyone in the opposition and did some secret negotiations with the president, Uhuru Kenyatta, and then they did a handshake and they said, now we want to reunite the country. This is something that really, really, truly, deeply irritated Miguna. So he fell out with Raila Odinga, but of course he had been dismissing the sitting president, Uhuru Kenyatta, throughout since his controversial election last year.
Fred Omulo is a Kenyan journalist. He spoke with my colleague Douglas Mpuga from Kisumu. The UN Refugee Agency warns an estimated 1.5 million homeless people in the Democratic Republic of Congo are destitute and vulnerable to diseases and exploitation. For VOA, Lisa Schlein has more from Geneva.
A UNHCR survey of seven of DR Congo's 26 provinces finds around 1.5 million people in these areas of conflict have had their homes damaged or destroyed. UN refugee spokesman Charlie Yaxley says the limited scope of the survey presents only a partial picture of homelessness throughout the country. He says the true number of those displaced by deadly clashes between armed groups and government forces is probably higher. He tells VOA there continues to be a steady number of attacks in the eastern part of the country, particularly in the province of Ituri. He says violence there has increased significantly since September.
We've had 100,000 newly displaced people, specifically in Ituri, since September alone. And that's placing even more strain and pressure on the humanitarian response there. And in the eastern part of the country, many people are being left without shelter and homes simply because humanitarian organizations are having difficulties with access.
Yaxley says the situation of access is especially difficult in North Kivu, which is in the midst of a virulent Ebola epidemic.
People are also reportedly reluctant to come forward out of fear from attacks by armed groups. And once you throw Ebola in there as well, I mean, on all measures, people are in urgent and dire need of more support.
The United States has renewed its travel advisory, warning citizens not to go to eastern DRC and the three Kasai provinces because of the dangers. The United Kingdom, Canada, and other countries have issued similar travel alerts. The UNHCR says it is short of cash to help the many people who lack proper shelter. It says they have little protection against the elements or intruders. It says they are exposed to sickness and disease. It says women and girls in spontaneous settlements are at great risk of sexual violence. The agency reports less than half of its $200 million budget for this year's humanitarian operations in DRC is covered. It is appealing to donors to fill this gap. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
And you are listening to Nightline Africa on the English service of The Voice of America. I'm your host, Peter Clote, in Washington, D.C. Coming up in the second half of Nightline Africa, the Saturday music spot from our collection of music from the continent. But first, more than 100 people in Cameroon who have been arrested for attempting to create an English-speaking country were freed Friday. President Paul Biya had ordered legal proceedings against them to be stopped a day earlier. For VOA Moki, Edwin Kenzeka has this report from the Cameroonian capital, Yaoundé.
More than 100 people in Cameroon who had been arrested for attempting to create an English-speaking state were freed Friday. As Moki Edwin Kenzeka reports for VOA from Yaoundé, President Paul Biya had ordered legal proceedings against them to be stopped a day earlier. Text. Security was tight at the Yaoundé Military Tribunal, where hundreds of English-speaking Cameroonians gathered Friday to watch the release of 120 detainees a day after President Paul Biya ordered that all legal proceedings against them be stopped. Another 169 are reportedly still held in several detention camps around the country. 34-year-old Vincent Buma was the first to regain his freedom after 7 months. Buma says he was arrested in the northwestern town of Bafut and taken to Cameroon's capital, Yaoundé.
I'm very, very happy. I'm going to tell the people that there is nothing wrong with the country and that our people who are in the bush, let them reason and come back.
36-year-old Rajali Ajara from the English-speaking northwestern village of Sabga says she traveled to Yaoundé overnight, hoping her husband, elder brother and neighbor, arrested 17 months ago, were among the detainees released. Unfortunately, only her brother regained freedom. She says President Biya should have freed everyone.
The best thing for him to do is to call for dialogue. He needs to dialogue with the people and release all the detainees involved in the crisis. We have seen him, you know, dialogue with Boko Haram fighters. He has even paid ransom. So if he can do same in the northwest and southwest, then I think peace will return.
Tata Julius, whose father was released, says Biya's initiative was not enough to bring peace.
If he wants true peace to reign, remove these military who are shooting people on a daily basis. Remove them from our towns, our streets. Remove the military cars, armored cars that are walking the streets every day. And then we know that, yes, you are looking for a lasting and peaceful solution to this problem.
The conflict that led to the arrest of 289 people began in 2016 when teachers and lawyers in Cameroon's English-speaking region complained about discrimination by the French-speaking majority in education and the justice system. The government responded to the crackdown that led to a violent separatist movement to create an English-speaking state within Cameroon. Ngaibe Philip, one of the lawyers defending English-speaking detainees, says Biya should be tried for refusing to respect Cameroon's laws and taking people charged with simple crimes to the military tribunal.
How on earth would you take a crisis of misdemeanor and they are judged in a military court? Now, majority, like our president, Seseko, fall under felonies. It means those ones are going to remain in jail while a minute number of 289 are released under misdemeanors. This is absolute nonsense, and it is not going to change the face of the struggle in any way.
Cameroon's Defense Minister, Joseph Beti Asomo, said those who have received the president's pardon exclude convicts charged with terrorism, inciting violence, and taking up weapons against the state. Such may face death penalties, he said. Moki Edwin Kinzeka for VOA News, Yaoundé.
Why don't you give me more, Stanwa? If you would feel my soul, come near.
And right now it's time for music from our African collection. You'll be hearing from Tale Wazinza featuring Ja Praise with Give Me More, Asle with Nibibi, Keys Daniel with African Girl, and of course Yemi Alade, Oh My Gosh.
You don't wanna leave me, baby, do you? Everything I say from my heart, so true.
Yeah, 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 yeah. Stand by me, envision and see a world we built with endless possibility. Daliwami, stand wasami, promise me you'll never change. Why don't you give me more, stand what?
Would you love me
if
more?
If you would be my soul, come near me.
Nada mapenzi
sasa eti kwengine sipati sijiwezi ndo maneno wasema kwamba kwako sifurukuti sijiwezi ndivyo hivyo wanavyosema na mimi na nyamaza kimya na kupenda ogopa nikikuna na kuwa kimya sina cha kusema na kupenda sina gafaranga na shuka kupanda ila na kupenda mimi kwako ni mjinga sina ga ujanja wache wanofunda kama chumba midalali penzi letu nifike mbali ni bebe
na kupenda usiwe na
mbebe ni bebe
hata kama niki nini nini
ni bebe
wanataka niwe chini
penzi we ni bebe. Nimesikia umekungia na group matusi matupu wana kunyanyasa wana kutukana jitoe usiwe mchonga vinyago tanifirisi mwisho wa siku tukigombana ikawa hadithi we kitumbo mbele mbele kwa kuku na chipsi usiacha hata mifupa utakuwa fisi kama chumba
Baby, oh, I shake, baby, shake.
me gaga chomu appreciate it. This a body man marama. Baby you a shake, baby shake. Me gaga chomu appreciate it. African boy, she call me magician boy. African boy, she call me magician boy. African boy, she call me magician boy. African boy, you know you want good love. You got it back to Capiran, Capiran, Capiran. You got it back to Capiran, Capiran, Capiran. Now they see I'm too. African boy, you got me magician boy. African boy, you got me magician boy. African boy. Come on, magic shamba.
Throw it.
amefuzwa kazini na ajui atafanya nini. Mke wake amemtoroka, rafiki zake wanamcheka, shida amepata nyingi amechoka, dunia anajuta.
Acha kulia shida za dunia, hebu tulia, Mungu anakujali pia. Acha kulia shida za dunia, hebu tulia, Mungu anakujali pia.
Maisha mwendo ni pole, ukipata shida leo usikonde, wengi wako kama wewe usijali. Acha kulia kimaisha makali, tizama kwanza uone kesho, usikonde uwape vichekesho. Maisha itakuwa na matatizo, muombe Mungu atakupa uwezo.
Acha kulia shida za dunia, hebu tulia, Mungu anakujali pia. Acha kulia shida za dunia, hebu tulia, Mungu anakujali pia.
Hizo shida usifikirie uko nazo peke yako, labda Mungu anakuletea kesho. Uwezi jua kama leo sio yako, kwa hiyo masikini usikonde, labda kesho utapata. Mungu alipanga maisha kwa karata, tunapanga na yeye anapanga. Shida za dunia ninakwambia,
acha kulia shida za dunia, hebu tulia, Mungu anakujali pia. Acha kulia shida za dunia, hebu tulia, Mungu anakujali pia. Acha kulia shida za dunia, hebu tulia, Mungu anakujali pia. Acha kulia shida za dunia, hebu tulia, Mungu anakujali pia.
Look at the-
Just hearing Malo with Bracket, but before then you heard Awulolongomba featuring P Square with Enemy Solo and Jose Chameleon with Shida Za Dunia. That was music from the continent. We hope you enjoyed it. Nightline Africa comes to you on Saturdays and Sundays at 16 and 18 hours UTC from the English service of the Voice of America. And from the rest of the Nightline team, managing editor Shaka Sally, reporter Douglas Impuga, producer Saida Hamdoun, and our engineer for today, Nashwan Kali, we say a big thank you for joining us tonight. And remember, as the elders say, the hunter in pursuit of an elephant does not stop to throw stones at birds. I'm your host, Peter Clotter in Washington. Good evening, Africa.
This is VOA News. I'm Jim.